From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made about 6 years ago in Rochester when a local woman decided that she loved her city, but she didn't really know it enough, or at least she could stand to learn a lot more about it. And so Amy Crossed Reek decided that she was going to walk every single street in Rochester, every neighborhood, every quadrant, every street. She would see it all. Didn't really know how long it would take, but she was going to try. And this was not for charity. It certainly wasn't for publicity either. In fact, I can tell you she is a terrible self-promoter. This past spring, when Amy was getting ready to finally finish off her goal of walking every street in the city, it was a family member who mentioned her story to a reporter. Trust me when I tell you, it has not been easy for me to convince Amy this is worth talking about on this program. She didn't post pictures on social media or boast about her walks. She did it just to see and learn and experience her city in a much closer, more authentic way. And I really admire that. She's finished her goal, and I've convinced her that people would want to know about it and her experiences. And I have to say, I can't wait to learn more about how she put together the plan and what stands out most from these past 6 years. So my guest for the hour is Amy Crossed Reek, who has spent those years walking every single street in Rochester. I hope you don't mind me calling you a terrible self-promoter. I think that you can at least agree to that.
I do agree to that, absolutely.
That's not why you did this. I mean, a lot of people, you know, will do various things, you know, long-distance bike rides, things like that, for charitable reasons. That wasn't at all what it's about. Not that you're not a charitable person, but why did you decide you wanted to do this 6 years ago?
I think you hit the nail on the head. Not exactly sure when the thought first entered my mind, but I absolutely knew that, I've lived in Rochester most of my life, and there were so many parts of it that I was unfamiliar with. And, Rochester is that you often hear described as two cities or a divided city. And, you know, finding that I really only lived in half of it and wanted to find out all about Rochester or as much as I was able to. So I just started off slowly.
Have you grown up and thought of yourself in adulthood as someone who loves Rochester?
Yes, absolutely. I grew up in the city. Mm-hmm. I went away to college, as many people do, and ultimately found my way back here. You know, great city to raise a family, to earn a living, to just be. You know, we have so much to offer here. And so my husband and I moved back with our children about 18 years ago to the city, and have lived in the city since. So,
I'm trying to think, if I were to set out with a plan like this, I mean, I guess you can grab a map and you can kind of plan things online, but I'd probably also reach out to the city. What did you do? How did you go about that process then?
You're giving me way too much credit, Evan.
You're going to do every street. You got to come up with some kind of a game plan, don't you?
Yes, yes. I did have a street map, and it was very, very low tech. And I simply just went on walks and came home, and I highlighted every street as I went, and I just posted on my kitchen wall there, and just said, "I'm gonna get to this."
So it was a physical map,
an actual physical map,
which
yes.
They still make.
They still do make. I assume I bought this one a little bit back.
Yes,
so
yes.
What's funny about it is that I actually did bring it just to have my little evidentiary piece of paper here. But when I started, I didn't need reading glasses, so it became harder and harder to see where I was walking. I developed a system where I'd take a picture of the map and blow it up on my phone. But just to give you an idea of how long it did take me, it was kind of just, you know, a process where I said, I'm going to do what I can. I didn't set a deadline for myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was important because I thought if I had, I might get discouraged, you know, feel like, oh, I'm not meeting my deadline. Or I just said, I'm going to do this. And as long as it takes me, it'll take me that long.
Did you get a sense for how long you thought it might take?
No, but I remember when I started, one of my friends, and I did have a couple of people that might join me when they could out walking, which I always enjoyed company. And she said, how long do you think this is going to take you? And I said, well, maybe 8 years. So I guess I did okay.
Wow. So you really did think the better part of a decade, even early on. Yeah. It was not a bad estimate there. It was pretty close.
Yeah. And mostly because it wasn't a race. I mean, obviously, I could have done it in a year if I, you know, didn't have much else on my plate and just really dug at it or something. But that wasn't part of it, to do it in a time crunch.
And you mentioned that you did enjoy when people would join you, but did you walk alone at times?
Most of the city. I did walk alone. Yeah, most of the time I did walk alone. I would say maybe a third or so. I had people joining me at parts, or maybe half of the city streets, just kind of as an estimate, I guess. I had, you know, my mom and my sister were two of my fans that would walk quite a bit with me, and I always enjoy their company. It was kind of our time to catch up and, hey, family news, you know, those kinds of things. But I enjoyed walking by myself, too. I think people are more approachable when they see you alone, actually. Kind of works the opposite, maybe, of what you might think. And I really enjoyed talking to people that I'd never met before. I love meeting new people. I really enjoy conversations that just spring up that, you know, are the unexpected. And sometimes that was easier when you're by yourself.
I think that makes sense, given that, you know, if I were home and people were walking by, if I saw two people walking, I might think, well, they're talking to each other. You know, I'm not going to break whatever they're doing. And if I saw one person, it actually may be easier. So that's interesting. And so I want you to sort of kind of take me through what a typical walk would be like. I mean, did you set a time limit, a distance limit? I mean, when you would go out, did you say, these are the streets I'm going to walk in this shop? Because if you meet somebody and you stop and talk, that can all of a sudden take a lot more time than you thought it may take.
Yeah. I really, as I said, given me far too much credit here for having an orchestrated plan about this. I usually just went out and just with an open mind and said, I'm going to walk till I get tired, or I don't want to walk anymore, mm-hmm. or it starts to pour rain, or whatever it was. And typically I would drive to a neighborhood. It got obviously to a point where I couldn't walk to all the places sure. I would want to go, because, you know, you can drive across town. It might take you a half hour. You know, if you live on the south side, to go to the north side or something. So I'd have to drive places, park my car, and walk around from that neighborhood. Once or twice, I did take a bus, you know, a city bus, just to a location, and that just made sense for what I was doing. I ended up backtracking very often because, you know, sometimes you just have to do it, and that's okay, too. But, yeah, it was not necessarily a plan at the start of the day. But I think I would say typically I might walk a couple times a month for 5 miles or so. So this is by no means a marathon. People do way more. I mean, this was not a rigorous exercise plan. Trust me on that.
Well, do you know how many miles it is total that you did now?
Oh, boy. Yes. I think I do. Someone may know better than me because I'm just going from memory. But I think it was maybe 570, right about there.
570.
Yeah. And I did at one point several years back call the city and say, hey, I'm just curious, like, how many miles of streets are there? And I left a message and I didn't really hear back. And I just kind of, oh, well, I'll figure it out when I figure it out.
And that was it? You never heard from the city?
I did when I finished, yes. And they were very, very nice. This is kudos to Adam Chodak. I'm just going to throw that out there because I really told very few people about what I was doing.
Yep.
I was not interested in really making this a big deal because it wasn't. It was really more of a personal thing for me. And, you know, as I started mentioning it, when I knew this was going to become a reality, I told a few other people, like my brother, who then, you know, word got down the ground. Oh, I think you might be interested in what my sister's doing. And I thought, oh, geez, this is really the most boring story that's ever going to come out. But after watching what Adam did, boy, he's an excellent storyteller.
He is, yeah,
and
he's outstanding.
He really, I watched and I thought, oh, really, that was kind of interesting what I did.
Well, Adam let me know, but even before that story hit the air, and by the way, you can still see it online, and Adam really did a beautiful job doing the story visually and kind of going to some of the places that Amy went to in her 6 years. It's easy to find if you just Google it. It's through WROC-TV, and the piece aired in April. And yeah, that was your mistake in letting him know, because then he told me, and I said, I want to hear about this. And by the way, Amy, when I told my colleagues about this, they thought this was such a cool story. When WROC-TV did the story, I saw more people sharing it and thinking, this is a wonderful story. So I think that you have misgauged the public interest in this, because I really do think people can relate to the idea that no matter where you grow up, whether it's in Rochester and the city proper, or a suburb, or the Finger Lakes, or wherever it is, I'm in this category just along with most of the population. There's plenty of parts of my hometown that I haven't seen.
Absolutely.
Or as it grows over time, as it changes. So so it's nice to tell you, you were wrong. What you're doing is really interesting, and there's a lot of great interest in it. So, okay, so we're getting a sense for how you did this, and I think that's probably why the City Hall, they figured out what you'd done, and then did they call you, or what happened?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, they did. They did, actually, I'm going to take that back. My husband's an awesome guy, and he's a little bit embarrassing to me because he's been a champion for me, so thank you to Matt. And I think he maybe sent something to the city, or
okay.
I'm not really sure. I'm not on social media, Evan. I'm very poor at all this stuff. I'm not on Facebook. I don't do any of that. But somehow the city knew, and on my very last walk, I invited some of my friends that have walked with me over the years and said, hey, I'm going for my last walk if you want to come. And several people from the city showed up, and they presented me with a nice little certificate. So I thought that was neat.
Okay. Well, very nice. Well, we're going to be talking about with Amy about the fact that she walked every city street in Rochester. And I want to know what stands out for her. And I've got some specific questions. But listeners, if you have questions as well about her experience and what happens when you see every single street in a city, no exceptions, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Is this something that you would do or you would try? Have you done anything like this? Maybe in your own neighborhood or your own town. I'd love to hear from you. You can also find me on Twitter at Evan Dawson. You can email me, edawson@wxxi.org. So you started out about 6 years ago. Were you going to do it in the winter? Did you think did you stop and pause at all?
I did walk in the winter.
Okay.
There were certain neighborhoods that are not walkable in the winter, unfortunately, in Rochester. I will say that I noticed last year the city, and kudos to the mayor, she's done a great job about getting the sidewalks more clear. But several years back, that was not the case. There were many sidewalks that you couldn't safely walk on in the city. And so I found that out the hard way, that I really couldn't. There were neighborhoods I couldn't walk in.
It probably also gives you appreciation for people who, every winter, you know, somebody complains about snow shoveling, and probably most people hear that and they sort of roll their eyes. But when you're actually there and you see how tough it can be to get around, you know why that city service really matters, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think it's important equally for residents, if they can, to take care of the property when they're able. It's amazing to me when you see these hardy souls that are out there biking in the winter. We do have that,
yeah.
A lot of bikers out in the winter. But also the people in the disabled community, when you see them trying to maneuver in through snowbanks and drifts and on icy patches of walkway. And so it is an important service.
Okay, so you keep telling me you didn't have much of a plan and you just went out, you would go out and do as much as you could. But did you sort of go up and down the city? I mean, did you go kind of neighborhood by neighborhood at least? Because you had this map where you're marking where you've been. How did you decide how you're going to go about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I sort of started from where I live, which is in the south part of the city. I live in the Highland Park neighborhood and just kind of fanned out from there. There were times when if I knew that I was going to be walking in a neighborhood that somebody might consider a tougher neighborhood, and I knew I had somebody to walk with me, I'd just say, okay, I know where we're going to go. Because there were some places that I didn't always choose to walk by myself, especially given the time of day. That's not to say I walked many streets in the Crescent by myself. So it's not to say that I didn't do those on my own, mm-hmm. but I knew that if I did have company, I might save a particularly tough area, have a partner with.
Did you ever feel unsafe?
Several people have asked me that, and I would be lying if I said no. So there were a couple times that stick out in my mind, but I'm going to assure you that, absolutely. I mean, the three instances, I mean, and that I can think of that through the whole city, were one was purely in my mind, and two where I felt like this could have been a bad situation. were very short-lived. And I think I think that actually gave me an insight to what some people live daily. I didn't shy away from that because I felt like I'm just passing through, you know, and for better or for worse, there are some people that this is their reality, that they might have to deal with, not the instant that I'm happen to be passing down this block, but this is their block. And it did me a lot of compassion for people that are in these situations where they may not feel secure in their very own neighborhood.
Yeah, we've talked to people who have worked very hard to try to, for example, root out open-air drug markets, because there are parts of the city, there's probably parts of most cities in this country that have places where people who are selling drugs go. And we've talked to neighbors who, they will tell you that, yes, you would call this an open-air drug market, but the vast majority of us don't want that, you know, don't have this idea that this is all drugs, it's all crime. We want it gone just like anybody else. And you're nodding right away. You agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely agree with that. I mean, I am always struck by the goodness of people. Mm-hmm. And I've just been, you know, with the way that people have sort of embraced a stranger in their neighborhood, really, has always been impressive to me. I think that for a lot of people, this is their home. They take pride in it. They want it to be safe and secure, and they want a place for their kids to grow up in security and just like all the rest of us. So absolutely, you know, there are problems with drug markets and drug houses and things like that that you could witness, but that was a standalone. I don't think that they're necessarily friends with the neighbors.
Yeah, right.
The neighbors might feel that in some regard they have to tolerate for their own safety.
Sure.
And I think many of them do try to outright fight the problem.
And sometimes neighbors tell us that's the reason they're not outside with their own kids more. And that's another very sad part of that. We're talking to Amy Cross-Enrique, who's walked every street in the city of Rochester. It took her about 6 years, and she wasn't doing it every single day. It wasn't. It was just one of those things where she wanted to learn more and see more about her own city that she loved. And I just found it inspiring and asked her to come in and share the stories. Before I take our first phone call, let me just ask you to kind of go back over a point. You said there were maybe three times over 6 years where you felt maybe things would be unsafe. And one of those was in your own mind. I don't need you to tell me every detail, but what do you mean by that? I mean, did you think you were convincing yourself something was not what it was? Is that sort of what you mean by that?
You know, I thought about this situation that really made my heart race. And as I said, there were three of them that made me nervous. But the one that was imagined by me, I did have a situation where I was walking in a pretty remote part of the city, actually. It was a dead-end street that dead-ended into some railroad tracks. And there was a man probably in his very early 20s who was walking right up close behind me and kept gaining on me, and I was getting progressively more nervous because I thought, well, where's this guy going? And then I thought to myself, well, where the hell am I going? and at one point I thought, well, you know, I was trying to imagine, like, where would, you know, what would I do should this turn into a confrontation and there's nobody else around? It really was a very quiet street. And we got to the end of the street, and, you know, I heard him talk, you know, say something, and he ended up had just taken a phone call, and he said, "Yeah, Mom, I'm almost home. I'm just about to cross the railroad tracks." And he apparently lived on the other side of the tracks, and he was in a hurry to get home, and that's why, you know, I felt like he was gaining on me, and he was in a hurry, but not to catch me, apparently to get home. So, but, you know, it did make me think, this, you know, what would I do?
And then when you realized where he was going, and the fact that, you know, you had to ask yourself if it was a dangerous situation. Did it give you a moment to think about the way we think about other human beings, and sometimes we inject fear and suspicion where none is deserved?
Absolutely. Absolutely it did. And you know, this you know, I often think maybe I was only allowed to do this cuz I'm a pretty petite white woman in her 40s. I mean, I'm not out to threaten anybody, but I'm not an imposing person, and maybe that's one of the reasons I was able to move through the streets. The Trayvon Martin case really affected me emotionally. I really felt that. And I'd say that after his murder, I really made a commitment. Like, I know that sounds totally Pollyannish or something, but I just said, this young man was killed because, you know, he was a place where, quote unquote, he supposedly didn't belong. And somebody suspected him, you know, it was a horrific, horrific situation. And that's when I made the decision, I am going to finish this. And I often thought about him while I was walking, to be honest, and the exact situation that you describe, where you are a stranger in a strange place. And I probably am afforded a lot of goodwill that other people would not be afforded.
Well, before I grab Chris and Patrick, who are on the line, you're hearing from Amy Cross at Reek. I will just add, your story makes me think of the fact that I was a camp counselor for years down at Chautauqua Lake, and I remember there was one story, I had a go-to story that had a good sort of a laugh line at the end. But I look back now and I feel almost, I don't know if I have a word for it, sort of strange or awkward. It was just the story of, you know, you're always telling kids bedtime stories. They always want stories. And I would tell the story of someone who was in line at a grocery store grabbing a soda bottle or something, gives a dollar, notices someone in line who looks very strange staring at them, and then the person behind the register is giving very strange eyes, says nothing, looks almost menacing, and so the person who buys the soda gets out of there as fast as they can, walking home, and realizes about 100 yards up the road that person is now following them. They duck down an alley. That person is now following them. They turn back around to the next street. They see the person gaining on them. And finally, the person catches up to them, and you have this moment, and he says, "You forgot your change. Here's your nickel." And, you know, and the kids laugh at that, and there's this, but we did it as a bedtime story. And it was, there was never any sort of race or socioeconomics described. It was just sort of a dramatic ending that I told when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. And now I look back and I think, my goodness, there are human beings who are feeling that suspicion every day. Every day. And you know, your story just made me think of that. So anyway, you're really making us think this hour, Amy. So thank you for being here. Let me go ahead and grab our first phone call. This is Chris in Rochester. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, hello, Evan, and hello to your guest. I think this was an incredibly interesting project that you took on, Ms. Cross, and I was wondering whether you've considered possibly writing an article for any of the local print media about your journeys through the streets of Rochester. I can think of maybe several places where you would find a market for this, perhaps City Paper or 585. And the reason I ask is because a few months ago I read about a book recently published titled New York, The New York Nobody Knows, Walking 6,000 Miles Through the City. And the author is a professor at Columbia named William Helmreich, and he walked every borough of the city, Manhattan, Bronx, Queens, everywhere. I can't remember how long it took him. And I thought, I got to put this on my list of books to read. And I was thinking, I would certainly like to read about your observations of the city of Rochester, where I live, and I'm sure many other people would too. I wondered what you might think of that.
Thank you, Chris. Amy, the worst self-promoter in the world. Go ahead, take it away.
Thanks, Chris. I too heard about that book, about the professor who walked in all the boroughs of New York. I thought it was a fascinating story. It made me look like a little bit of a schlep, actually. Yes. But, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how comfortable I am. And to be honest, Evan really did have to ask me several times to come here and talk about it.
Yep.
Which I'm happy to do, mostly because I would love to get people thinking about ways to experience their own communities close up. And if it gives anybody else a reason to go out and patronize a business in a neighborhood they wouldn't normally go to, or to take a chance and step outside of their comfort zone by experiencing something new. There are plenty of people that, I mean, most of us actually are just kind of on our daily, you know, drive to work, drive to the grocery, yep. drive to our errands, and don't kind of expand our repertoire.
Me too. It's the same place. Getting a haircut at the same place. Sometimes even going out to eat if you do that at the same place. You know, there's not a lot of deviation.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm convinced, Chris, that I would want to write an article. I didn't, I was just really trying to be open to experiences. And I've had other people say, oh, did you blog about it? Did you keep a photo diary? And I have to say no to both of those things. It was important to me as I was walking to not, I did not want people living their daily lives to feel like they were a spectacle to me. That was not part of this. This is not a curiosity. You know, I think I did take some photos when I had permission from somebody of things that really struck me or, you know, here and then. But it really wasn't about that. You know, my passing through is somebody else's daily reality, and I did not want it to seem like this was a spectacle, particularly in some of the areas of poverty in
All
the
right.
city.
Patrick in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yes, I was wondering about maybe, you know, not to destroy the intimacy, but maybe it could be more intimate, about a video component of this. For many people who can't drive, you know, the nursing home thing, or won't drive, to go through, you know, our city streets, the familiar, the old corner pub or this or that. Or, I mean, how many people have seen really talk about our inner loop, but show that sort of is becoming. And maybe in the seasons, you know, there are places that have Christmas decorations and the gorge at Maplewood Park with the leaves, and just sort of like, you know, a travelogue with that sort of our town touch. And I just, that's the question.
I appreciate that. I one of the great things about this city is that we have so many talented photographers, and I'm not one of them. the couple pictures that I got, you know, are just on my little iPhone, but there are just, I mean, some amazing artists and photographers here that are, you know, and videographers, and we have a great community for that. I think, you know, for anybody interested, and I do think that there are a number of photo books out there that feature Rochester in different neighborhoods and seasonally. I have a couple of those table type books as well, and some specializing in neighborhoods or Mount Hope Cemetery or some of the parks and things like that. It's architecture. There is a wealth of that, and I'm very grateful to the very talented photographers that are able to tell the stories with pictures.
My guest for the hour is Amy Cross-Henrique, who might very well be the only person in our city who has seen every single street. It's possible, because she set out 6 years ago to do that, to walk every street, to be on foot on every single street in the city that she loves, to learn it more, to see it up close. I think very self-awarely saying not to make people a spectacle, to turn their lives into a spectacle, but to respectfully say she had seen all of it and not be able to to kind of go through life not really knowing where you live. So fascinating stuff. When we've got a lot of questions from listeners in various forms. We're going to get to those. More phone calls as well coming up. I've got questions about, I know Amy loves art and architecture. I want to know what she saw that maybe she didn't know before she set out, or anything that stands out to her that really excited her. Some of you have been wondering, did she find any little small diners or restaurants or shops that stand out as well? We'll hit that as well and much more with Amy after this only break of the hour on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, how much do you know about Stonewall? If you hear the name Stonewall, does it immediately trigger the cultural and historic importance for the gay community in the United States of America? Maybe it should, but for most of us, we don't know much about it. And when it comes to local cultural landmarks, what stands out for the gay community in Western New York? The Landmark Society is trying to identify them, and we'll have a conversation about that next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And next up on the phones is Mary in Rochester. Mary, you're on with Amy Crossed-Reek, who's my guest who walked every street in the city of Rochester over the last 6 years. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. I'm listening to this. I read about it in the DNC a while ago. But hearing Amy talk live and your enthusiasm, Evan, I was sitting here, I'm a teacher in the city schools and nearing retirement and feeling, you know, I have this summer to think about my next group of students, and I just thought, we don't know where our students live. We don't connect. Neighborhood schools are gone, and I was thinking, I want to walk on my student streets. Amy, you have inspired me, and I feel like we need to do this kind of connecting. And I think I'm going to commit, and I'm going to see if any of my colleagues will do it with me. We'll look up addresses and just do this as a way to really commit to understanding better our students' lives, where they come from, where they go home to every day. And I'm just, you know, kind of almost shaking with enthusiasm over this.
I'm so happy, Mary. I am a teacher, too, and although I teach in a suburban district, we participate in urban-suburban program, and I had the actual experience of running into one of my students walking down the street where they lived, and she was just about out of her mind, Senora, what are you doing here? And, you know, it was really a neat connection. And I think as a teacher, we would understand our students so much more if we could experience their neighborhoods.
I know a lot of my colleagues don't even live in the city. I do. And I love living in the city. And I just feel like, you know, especially because I'm seeing the end of my teaching career, and I just thought this might be a wonderful way to, you know, really see the city I've lived in for 25 years and see my students in a way that we just don't anymore. We just don't get to do that. So thank you so much, Evan and Amy. This is great.
Mary, thank you for the phone call. That has to hit you. I know you've downplayed in your own mind, and I saw your husband on Twitter has already said, I know you're not on Twitter, which you and all the presidential contenders should learn from you. But your husband is saying how proud he is of you and how great it is for him to hear others who've never met you validate his thoughts for years, which is that this is interesting and valuable. And that's got to hit you, hearing Mary say, I'm a teacher, I'm going to do this. What is that like for you?
Yeah, well, I want to thank Mary first of all, for calling, but for your service as a teacher. And it is something anybody can do. I just went for a walk. That's it. I went for a walk. And my brother teases me. He lives in Philadelphia. And he, when this story first came out, I think in April, I have a big family. So it's my older brother here. He said, well, you know, you live in a small town when going for a walk makes the news. But he was teasing me because he obviously agreed there was a little bit more to it as well. It's something anybody can do or participate in a way that they can, even if it's not a walk, but just visiting a neighborhood that they might not see.
So, Amy, I made a list of things I wanted to make sure I found out from you. And our listeners are so engaged, and I want to make sure their questions also help run the second half hour. So I'm going to try to move quickly through some of mine and some of theirs that have come in online here.
Okay.
So I want to start with any great food or shops. Or I mean, were you stopping at all? I mean, generally you're walking, but are you stopping and eating at any point? I mean, did you find anything that you've never been to and you think, I can't believe I was never there. That was fabulous.
Absolutely. Yes. There's so many hidden gems all over this city. And I remember years ago hearing a restaurant critic say, oh, the best food you're ever going to find is in strip plazas in the inner city. And he said, because the rent is low, it's good ethnic food. People are newly arrived. They got the recipes. I mean, this is their, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So I made sure that when I was out walking, I always had a little bit of cash on me. And if I found a bakery or stopped for lunch or a breakfast or even just a cold drink, something, besides getting some great food, it might also be a way to talk to a shopkeeper. A lot of the people in those shops are the people who own those shops. And that was also neat to be able to talk to them.
Anyone stand out? You want to give a shout out to any?
Wow, there are so many. I did really love this Brazilian place that used to be just down the block from you, but I noticed they closed. That was a loss to you guys.
I was actually wondering, over 6 years, you probably saw some changes in the city.
I certainly did.
Yeah.
I certainly did. And there are some tried and true places, little jewels. There are some great Spanish restaurants. I love, there's great Jamaican restaurants in this town. There's a great place on Chile Avenue, or I think it's just off Chile Avenue, and I'm very bad with names. I apologize for that. So I just can't think of it. Pepe Pot, I know, is another great Jamaican place, just tucked away on a side street. You might not know it. There are so many little places like that that I really have found, and I probably should have tried to make a list. But again, you're going to find these jewels in unexpected places.
All right. Monica on Twitter says, this is an awesome story. She wants to know, what was the coolest moment or thing you saw, and also the saddest?
Two really good questions. I think, a lot of cool moments, but I'm gonna tell the story of a great interaction, because this was, I think, maybe the happiest moment that I also thought was really cool. I was walking in a neighborhood off of Lyle Avenue, out west, the western end of Lyle Avenue, and it was a summer day, maybe 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and there was a block party going on. It was their neighborhood block party. And I just kind of intruded on it. And well, here I am. I'm walking down your street and you're having a block party. Sorry. And, you know, it was interesting. The reaction to me just kind of walking up, and people said, well, come on over. Let me fix you a plate. Have a seat. They pulled out a lawn chair off their front porches. And people just were so friendly and so nice. And it was meant to be this neighborhood block party, which you could see everyone was enjoying each other's company. And they welcomed me. They welcomed me into their neighborhood. And that was a really neat thing for me to be able to participate. I was very much humbled by that.
So that's the coolest thing.
That was the coolest thing. The saddest thing, I would say, I'm struck by the many, many memorials throughout the city that you see on a lot of street corners in some of the tougher neighborhoods where probably, you know, they're due to violence, that people have been killed. And there's almost too many to name. They're all over the city, and you wouldn't necessarily see them. There was one that struck me. It's in the north side of the city, and in a very small side street, and a makeshift memorial on the street for someone that had passed, a young man that had passed away, was killed. And in the, it was in front of a house, and in front of the house there were some small kids playing in the yard there, and out on the street, drug paraphernalia. And it was sad. It made me wonder about those children, and hopefully a different future for them, a different outcome. That was a sad moment.
I know you love art and architecture. Did you see anything that you think, I had no idea this was here. This is fantastic.
Wow. Yes. I have to say the murals, most of us are familiar with the murals, or at least the mural projects in Rochester, if we haven't seen all of them.
I don't know if most are. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, they'll drive by some of these murals and say, wow, you know, what is that? It kind of catches you by surprise. It can be really impressive.
Yeah, and they're all over. They're really spread out, and they're beautiful, and they're vibrant. And I have to give a shout out to Sean Dunwoody. I think he's done great things for this city, for public art and community art, really, and for the community at large. I think that can give people a sense of pride in their neighborhoods when they see a piece of beauty. I feel the same way about gardens. I think gardens are a form of art. People's home gardens, people might call them vernacular gardens, I suppose. You know, it's kind of the opposite of, you know, Versailles, where, you know, people just kind of put these found objects and create and do these neat things in their own yards. And it's a point of pride for them. And I always appreciated that hard work. And so many beautiful buildings in this city as well. Really beautiful homes. Sometimes in places where you might not expect them. I was struck by West Avenue and Chile Avenue. Everybody knows these gorgeous homes on East Avenue, but West Avenue, I mean, it's beautiful. It's the forgotten. I want to say ugly stepsister of East Avenue, but at one time it was its equal, I'm sure.
Andrea wants, well, I got cut kind of a bunch here. But Andrea wants to know if you have a single favorite street.
Well, I'd have to say my own street where I live. But that's just bias. It's hard to say. I don't know if I have one favorite street or even a favorite neighborhood per se, because they're so different. There's so much vibrancy in the city. And there's different characters to different neighborhoods. And that's another thing that's very interesting.
Did you say hello to most people you passed or saw in front of their homes? Did most respond with at least a hello? And how often did you end up in conversation?
I would say most people would, I would always try to say hello. I wouldn't necessarily like cross the street to say hello.
Sure.
But absolutely. If my path crossed with somebody, absolutely tried to say hello and would, if they're out gardening, try to just, hey, garden looks great. Start a conversation. I would say maybe 25% of the time I would end up in a conversation with somebody. And I didn't always tell people what I was doing necessarily. I didn't, that wasn't part of the conversation.
Sure.
Just small things like, oh, garden looks great. Beautiful day out today. You know, do you like this neighborhood where you live in? You know, things like that.
On Twitter, Magnus writes to us. He says, I do something similar. Starting in 2008, I started walking my dog and decided never take the same path twice. I still have it. I have now covered most of the east side and south side of the city. And north on St. Paul. And he says, I've met a lot of amazing people. The weirdest part, being a white man in mostly black neighborhoods, police will stop me thinking I'm looking for drugs. Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Grant writes to us and wants to know, does Amy think that our city is as segregated as people say?
Well, I'm going to go to the first comment for a second, but I definitely want to address that second one. So we have a dog. We had a dog. We just a couple of weeks ago, I had to put our dear angel down, and she did start walking with me. I would take her out occasionally. She was 14 when we had to put her down a couple of weeks ago. So when I started 6 years ago, she was still pretty healthy. So that's when she would come out early in our walks. And for a lot of people, having a dog with you is a real conversation starter. hey, what's your dog's name? And I found a lot of people were open to a conversation when you're walking with a dog, because that's why you're walking. It's a built-in excuse in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to walk my dog. In some ways, it was more strange for me to be out walking by myself. That actually seemed a little more suspicious. Like, there's this, I actually had on more than one occasion young Black people, young, usually men, asking me, are you a police officer? They wanted, so I'm getting maybe the opposite of what, Magnus? What's Magnus?
Yeah, Magnus.
You know, are you a police officer? Like, why are you in our neighborhood? So again, maybe that goes to, I'm afforded a little bit of good grace or something. I'm not really sure.
But if they're surprised to see a white person in their neighborhood, then that to me confirms
exactly
a little of Grant's concern that we are segregated.
Yeah, so that, yeah, I was going to say, that does go to that. I do think we are a segregated city. I absolutely think that it's not only as bad as people say, I think it's probably worse than what most people think, just because most people haven't seen it. We are a segregated city. And I think that we have a real problem with housing in this city. Housing is a major concern. I think our housing is segregated. Have a lot of thoughts about that. One of the things about walking is you have a lot of time to think when you're walking. So, but it goes beyond that. I mean, it's just the quality of housing, the security of the housing. The problem with lead is terrible. There's a lot of issues, but it is a segregated city.
All right, let me grab another phone call. This is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. Any comment I make is not to be taken personally by you, in terms of you obviously had a good experience and kind of a joyful one for the most part, and that's a good thing to have. But I want to also talk here about, you kind of touched on the segregation issue. A couple things I would say is, one is, and this is, you know, kind of to you, but to the audience listening too, is that people need to use public transportation more. Need to put their cars up and start doing it. And part of that's the environmental issue, which is critical. But part of it is, you know, we really need to understand what people who have less and have to struggle each day, what that really means every day. And you can't do that from a car. So, and that means there's good and there's not so good. Okay. So that would be the first, one of the big things. Put your freaking car up and start walking and using public transportation a lot. Number two is, you mentioned the segregation issue. This may be a personal question to you, but to others, really, the audience listening, is, are people, when you talk about segregation, are people willing to live in neighborhoods that perhaps have some of these problems in terms of you're right about the housing. It's a huge issue. We spent most of our money, whatever we got, investments downtown. We spent, you know, we had budgets been cut a lot from federal money for neighborhood, fix-ups and everything, roofs and everything. So, but are people, the ultimate way you solve this is you have to have people individually and collectively willing to change their habits.
Yeah, and Bonnie, let me jump in because we're going to lose time here. Bonnie's right about this, Amy, when I think she says, if people are not willing to live together, the government can do whatever it can, but it's going to be sort of this the shell game, and people will continue to move away, et cetera. Do you think people are willing, or how do we get there?
Yeah, it's a very,
it's a complex,
very good
question.
It's super complex. There's many strands of it. And I mean, I think that there are things that the government can do. Obviously, with this, you know, mixed income housing requirements are important, I think. And making sure that is housing in neighborhoods where people want to live. You know, everybody wants the same things, right? No matter who you are, you pretty much want a way to be able to support yourself, live in a safe place. Maybe if you have a family, raise your family in safety and provide what you need to provide for them in terms of not just experiences, but education. So this is a very complex problem with a lot of different strands. And certainly education and housing are tied together as well. Yes.
We've almost lost the hour down to our last just 30 seconds, but a couple of our listeners wanted to know, do you see a disparity in the way the city is investing downtown versus some of the neighborhoods?
Yes, in a word. And, you know, I think that that's a hard problem also. It's a more complex problem. They do need to get around that. It is important to invest in downtown. I think, as a matter of fact, I think it's critical to invest in downtown. If businesses leave downtown for the suburbs, which many, many have, that's also hurtful to the city. So I don't have a great answer, but yes, it is not equitable.
I honestly think we could have done all day on this. Our listeners are so engaged in this. And Amy, to the extent that you doubted it, your husband was right. It's the one time he's ever been right. Matt, if there's one for you, Matt. Amy Crossed-Reek walked every street in Rochester. Amazing experience. Thank you for being here. I just respect what you've done so much, and I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Short break. Much more Connections next.